Hi, I am Dr. Sanjaya Kenya. I am a professor of medicine at the University of Miami School of Medicine. I happen to be the only Black female who is a full professor of medicine here on this campus. And I am also the CEO of Dignified Health Solutions, which is my company that produces all natural products and services to enhance sexual well-being.
Hey, it's Kellen. And today on Diversified Game, I just want to get it out the way, because you guys are going to say, Kenya, Dr. Kenya. That's because of my connection with Kenya, Mambo, Jumbo, Uhaligani, Kenya. We love you. But Dr. today is actually here in Miami. She is part of a very special group of people connected to me, because she's from the Bay Area, y'all. She's from San Francisco. I'm from Oakland. We won't have any arguments about whose team is what, because we lost our teams. We're losing them all, it seems. But she is a sex expert and a professor at the University of Miami, and you heard that in the beginning. So I'm going to get right into it. Doc, we're talking sex or segs, as you say, to be safe on certain social, you know, medias, because they'll boot you. Welcome to the Diversified Game. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me here, Kellen. I'm super excited.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming. I'm excited to give the game, because let's just get it right out the way, because you know the rates. All the STD rates, STI rates, HIV, all that rates in Miami. But when you hear the music, you hear the festivals, you don't ever really hear people educating the audience. You hear a lot about people eating groceries, but they never call it, you know, analingus or by the proper name, which lets me know, when I used to teach sex ed to young youth, that they don't even know what they're doing. So how did we get here? Was this like a dream to be the Black Dr. Ruth back in the day? Give us the game, because I know you went to the same school at one of your schools too.
Well, you're from the Bay Area, so you know that's a super liberal environment. So I was raised by a very liberal family in terms of sexuality. I went to my first lesbian wedding when I was 7 years old. So I grew up knowing that love is love and everybody's allowed to love each other in the way that they feel is best. And so by the time my sexual development started occurring, HIV was on the forefront. And you know what they told me and probably every other heterosexual young Black woman at the time is, you're going to get HIV. And I was like, no, I'm not. I don't know what you're talking about, because you got to do some things to get HIV. It doesn't just, you know, come up and grab you. But the statistics showed that heterosexual Black women and men were at a really increased risk of contracting HIV. And we were the first actually population in the United States that had more HIV transmission through sex than injection drug use. So I love Black men and I wanted to have sex with them. And I realized at a pretty young age, you know what, if you want to have sex and sex is supposed to feel good, it should, you know, it should be like ice cream with a cherry on top. It should feel really good. It shouldn't be like, oh, damn, I got this potentially fatal STD. So I started, when I was already in graduate school at this point, I really started focusing on how can we help people learn more about sex and how do we have good sex?
And boom, there you go. So it was till graduate school. Before that, what were you thinking of doing, for those who are in graduate school saying, you know what, this sounds like a cool profession, but what were you already doing? Because you weren't just twiddling your thumbs and leisure study. So I just want to give some game on
I've always been, yeah, thank you. I've always been interested in health. Health has always been my focus. I've been a fitness instructor since I was in high school. I went to an all-girls Catholic school, and I actually skipped that step. That's probably what really prompted me to become a sexologist, is when you go to Catholic school, you learn nothing about sex at all. So I had a friend who graduated 9 months pregnant. No one had ever had an orgasm, but there was a lot of pregnancies and STDs going on. But what I was doing prior to focusing on sex was I was really focusing on health problems in Black communities. My grandmother died from diabetic related complications. So as a child growing up, I was not only told, or as an adolescent, that I was at a greater risk for HIV and other STDs, but I was also at an increased risk for diabetes. So when I started really focusing on sex in graduate school, I was coordinating a study. It was a diet and exercise study on obese, HIV positive women. At the time, the drugs were working to keep people alive, like people just stopped dying. So that was great. But a side effect of the drugs were that it was making people obese. So women were actually losing the fat in their arms and their legs, and then they were gaining it in their abdomen area. And we all know abdominal obesity increases our risk for diabetes, heart disease, all kinds of stuff. So when I was coordinating this study, it was a diet and exercise study for obese HIV positive women. And the reason why that study was so important was because when women were waking up as their stomach was getting bigger and they were losing their butt and losing their thighs, they stopped taking their medications. And if you stop taking your medications when you're HIV positive, you don't stay healthy. So we needed women, we needed anyone who was experiencing complications from the medicine to stay healthy and keep taking their medications. So it became very important for us to learn, does diet and exercise work from this medication-induced obesity? And during that time, I had so many wonderful relationships with women who contracted HIV from unsatisfying sexual relationships. And so I was like, you know, what I'm doing is really important. This figuring out how to solve metabolic complications from diseases, that's really important. That's what I'm doing. But you know what else is important? Helping people have good sex. Because my goodness, if you're going to contract HIV, that should be the best sex you have ever had. You should have like 15 orgasms. I mean, it should not be like, I didn't come and I got HIV. That's terrible.
Wow. You know, you or YouTube would love this. The manosphere will eat this up. And I don't know what they're going to say about you, because yes, she's married, you know, to a high value man, for those of you like, but is he high value? And, you know, you look at you and your fitness. I don't know what they're going to say about you, but that is a very kind of taboo topic still in certain families. Your family was open, but you have so many people growing up in the church. You talked about going to Catholic school and not talking about it. Is it that Black folk are some of the most promiscuous people, or is it the fact that we're just not educating our people young enough? Because sometimes I was told, I have two daughters, 15, that's too young. Think about yourself. So, you know, answer all of that and let us know when we should be educating and having these conversations. We have them now a lot younger here in this house, but, you know, give us the game.
I think that we should start educating our kids as soon as they're able to understand anything. So my son is 10 years old, for example, and he was in my office last month, and he knows what I do. He has a friend who's a year older than him, who last summer asked me about sex in front of the other boys. They said, "Do you have to have sex to have a baby?" And I let them know that is one way that you can have a baby, is through sex, and that there are other ways. And we talked about the other ways that you can have sex. And then they said, "Well, did you have sex to have Donahue, to have my son?" So they got very pointed. So, and then a couple of months later, I was giving him and his friends a ride from basketball. And they said, my son said, "Mom, can you show us a condom?" And normally I have condoms everywhere, because I love to give them out to people who need them. And I did not have one on me, which was unusual, but he was in my office last month and I had a bunch of expired condoms I found in my desk drawer. And I said, "Hey, do you wanna see a condom?" He said, "Yes." And so we practiced putting a condom on a bottle, and I put one on and showed him, and then he practiced and he got it wrong. But what it made, and then we practiced until he got it right, and it was nothing. It was no big deal. Then we threw them away. He wanted to go wash his hands because he said they felt sticky from the lubrication that was on the condom. And I felt really, really good after that. When I was talking to his dad later, he also felt good about the experience, because you want your kid to know about it before they need it. It's not like you do not want them to have their clothes off, about to have their first experience with intercourse, fumbling with a condom. Because the reality is, like, 90% of people already use condoms wrong. You can imagine that percentage goes way up if it's a young, unprepared adolescent who's never even held a condom in their hand before. So I think as early as you can, you should start talking to your kids, because this is, when we don't talk to our kids, we make it taboo and secret. And then they find out from where? The internet, or from the older boy, or who's going to teach them about sex. So I would much rather know that my child's education is scientifically sound. And it goes beyond, like, the condoms. When he was a baby, he said, "Where do babies come from?" I said, "A man plants a seed in a woman." And you leave it at that. He was two. And then a few months, you know, a year later, he's like, "Where's he put the seed?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "The seed to make the baby." And he said, "They put it in your mouth?" I said, "No, they don't put it in your mouth." And he knows where he came from out of my body, because I tell him how hard it was to get my stomach back in shape. So I said, "They have to plant it closer to where you come from." So, you know, and he pointed to where he came from in my body, and he knows where he came out of. And I said, "Well, they plant it in that opening." And that was it. That was it. And then, you know, progressively, maybe a year later, he asked, "How do they plant the seed?" You know, so, and I think it's really, really important, and it's completely destigmatized in our household, and he understands it's something for people who really care about each other, and that there are consequences if you do it without the right preparation. There can be grave consequences, and a lot of my work at the university is dealing with the consequences of people who really didn't know how to have safe sex.
Sounds like a book, a kid's video, because, you know, I've worked with youth back in the day, and, you know, a lot of them in crisis, but their parents won't have those conversations. And your child, because of what you do and because of what my wife does, I'm married to medicine. You know, you have certain conversations. She has I won't quote her, what she says. I'll keep it somewhat, you know, all the way clean, but it's clean. But she's just saying where she comes out of. And the kids used to be, when they were five, kind of shocked, like, "Huh?" And now you're having, you know, kids being able to tell other kids, but kids' job aren't to educate other children. So is there any plans, or do you have any guides for parents who won't talk about it because it was uncomfortable? Maybe they grew up in the church and you hear Adam and Eve, and this person had this person. It started with two people. Kids start asking, "Wait, hold on, was that their brother? Was that their, you know, their sister?" Like, and some people, even in the church, cannot answer those questions because they were never answered for them. They had to find out just, you know, going through life, if they even found out, if they were even reading the scriptures. But that's a whole nother topic. But give us the game. Do you have any, you know, any booklets or training now or maybe in the future?
Yes, actually, I've been asked this often. I did a parent group a couple of weeks ago, and it was a group of parents, all of whom had HIV, and many of them talked about, you know what they tell their kids? Like, "Don't kiss a girl, she's gonna get pregnant." And I'm like, that's robbing your kids of scientifically sound education. And unfortunately, that is so common in Black families, that we say these things that are completely untrue. And it really limits the amount of preparation that our children have when going to engage in romantic relationships. So I think it's very, very much needed in our communities. And we are working on just a little guide, like how to talk to your kids about sex. And that may not be the title of it, but I purchased a book for my son to learn about how bodies are changing. And there was a time when he was not interested in the book at all. And now he really loves the book because he's at this point of prepubescence, you know, or where he's about to enter puberty. So I think it's, but that the one problem with the book that I bought my son is it's not culturally relevant for us. So there's no images of people of color, and it won't resonate with everyone. So we definitely need guides that are more accessible for everyone and that are simple, and just a guide for parents to give their children accurate sexual health information and helping them prepare. So in September, I would say September is the beginning of the academic year. We'll have a lot of new educational products available in September. They're all, you know, in the final stages of preparation now.
And I'm want to go and talk about, you know, your degrees. We'll start with Columbia, because when you start saying Columbia, y'all, you know, you're talking Ivy League. And I say that only to say, not to be an elitist, but to be, you have so much bad information on TikTok, on YouTube, and people calling themselves everything. People calling themselves doctor. When we grew up, only Dr. Dre, I can think of, whichever one. Did we say, okay, we'll give them a pass, whether the one from Yo MTV Raps or the, you know, musician. But now everybody's a doctor, philanthropist, entrepreneur. But you really went to school for this. What do you say to all of those, you know, influencers you see? I may even represent some, but I won't be offended, neither will they. What do you say to those people who are giving that advice and making themselves sound like they know all about anatomy and all about psychology? Some of them can astroturf, but they did not go through the systems that you went through. They did not write the thesis or the dissertation. So they have not been what school is there for, you to be tested. You ain't even there to learn like that. You're there to be tested, y'all. So what do you say to those people who you see probably every night, you know, online?
Well, I am extraordinarily, I don't know if it's honored or proud. I'm extraordinarily excited to be the only Ivy League trained sexologist and medical professor in the United States. So I want to start with that, because so many of our ancestors paved a way for me to be able to do that. This was not like an open field that we could all just go to any school that we wanted. I actually am from the type of family, when I ended up at Columbia, I did not even know it was an Ivy League school until I was already there. So, you know, I was fortunate that I was good in school and I was able to go to the schools that I wanted to go to, but it is a privilege that our ancestors created for us. And I think there's so much value that diverse sex educators can offer. A lot of people come into this field from experience. Maybe they used to be an adult performer or someone who worked in the sex industry, and then they decided to go to school after that experience. I know there are some leading people in this area who have no formal education. I also know someone who I admire very much in this area, the place where she was formally educated is not even an accredited school. And she is a doctor, a very, very well-known, you know, doctor of sex, and her school isn't even accredited at all. But I think I don't really have anything to say to them specifically, except for thank you for adding your content to the conversation, because I think it's important that the more people who talk about sex from an upward trajectory, when I say that don't make it like a nasty, taboo, grimy, backdoor type of a situation. So the more people who try to have sexual health conversations with credibility, I think that adds to the conversation and destigmatizes it and reduces the taboo. However, if you're consuming that information, it's really important for people to realize that maybe this person's school isn't even an accredited, or maybe they went, all of their training has come from, you know, working in transactional sex relationships. And we, just like we have to decide which doctor we want to go to, who has this, does this, you know, your insurance doesn't cover every doctor, right? So I'm very proud. You know, I'm also one of the few people who's ever been married and who's had a child who's in this, but it also speaks a lot to society. Most of the leading sexual health educators in this nation are white. And there has not been a lot of room for people of color to make an impact in this field, in this particular area of focus. So I think as the nation is changing, in less than 20 years, we're gonna be a majority minority society. I think that we are cultivating a different lens of how we want our sex education delivered. Like, I would like to talk to someone who actually looks like they've had sex in the last 10 years. You know, not everyone wants that. Some people want their sex education from someone who's never been married, not in a committed relationship, never had a kid. So, you know, we were talking earlier about educating our kids about sex, but what about educating the parents after they have kids? How do parents get their sex life back on track? And I think these are critical things that we want to think about. And I would be cautious of really putting all of my faith into a sexual health expert who doesn't have evidence of a long-term relationship, because Yes, it's not like we're not here turning tricks. You know, it's not how many people you've had sex with, is how can you make a good sex life within our relationships? And sometimes I think the way we think about them is very distinct. Like, this is my relationship, and then, but I can talk about sex. But no, I like to talk about sex within the context of relationships. And that could be because I also realize that nobody has more sex problems than the Black community. Nobody, and stronger sexual relationships build stronger families, and Black families have less stability than other populations. So I really believe if we can get our sexual relationships strong and healthy, it will help us have stronger families. Stronger families build stronger communities. And that's when we can start talking about economic empowerment. You know, splitting up, raising kids, splitting up money in all these different households. And then someone's now with a new person. Now they've got stepkids and money is all split in all these different directions. That is really, I believe, contributed to the power balance in society. I think there's also, you know, there's definitely a lot of financial benefits to having strong sexual relationships in addition to health benefits. And so, when it comes to, I think people should make educated decisions about who they trust, and they should look at a person's education. Thank you for highlighting mine. And they should also look at a person's experience and decide, does, you know, someone might have a lot to say about sex, but if they've never been in a long-term relationship, how does it fit into someone's life if that's what you're looking for?
And you are so welcome. I can highlight, you know, Columbia and UCLA. Now, if you went to that other school and, you know, that hood, that place, yeah, Stanford. Yeah, if you went, I could mention them, but I can mention UCLA as safe and Pac-10 friendly. Do you have any research? It's a question I tell people all the time, especially when they tell me, look, I'm having a child, you know, they're in a relationship. And it's like, as soon as they find out they're pregnant or right after, then they split up and they might've been together forever. And you're like, what is that? Do we even have a word for that? If you have a word, give it to us and educate us, please.
Reality, that's what it's called. It's like a baby is a nice idea when it's still in the belly. It's very beautiful, very nice idea. And this idea that we're going to bring this person into the world, I actually have this event, Date Night Special. And often a couple who's really in that lust phase of the relationship is there. And he's like, I just want to put a baby in her. And I'm like, no, you don't. No. You want to make sure these other things are worked out before you put a baby in her. So I think the stress of raising children is very, very undervalued, or maybe it's under discussed, under addressed, and how not only it impacts the relationship responsibilities of who's got to do what, the responsibilities increase by 1,000-fold, but it also has a deep impact on the sexual relationship of the parents. And one of the things I try to do with couples is prepare them for those changes. For example, breastfeeding and sexual desire are mortal enemies. So if you're a person like I was, I breastfed for 12 months, then I had a conversation, you know, with my husband prior to having the baby. Like, we understand this is going to completely deplete, you know, my sexual desire. If it doesn't, lucky, we're one of the zebras without stripes, but according to the science, it's probably going to deplete my desire for sex. So what are we going to do about this? And is this something we want to do? And that way we can have an educated decision about it. And to be extremely frank with some of your, whoever's listening with your, I actually purchased for my husband, it's like a thing he could put his penis inside of that would squeeze and do all kinds of different massaging techniques. And you could put lube inside of it. And it would do things that I was not going to be in the mood to do and not going to feel like doing in preparation for me not being in the mood to have sex. You know, some couples may decide they don't want to breastfeed. Some people may decide, you know what? I can breastfeed and have sex simultaneously because I'm Wonder Woman, you know, and it doesn't matter whether I want it or not, you know, but I do think it's important that people are educated about it. And then they learn the techniques also to get their sex life back on track after you sort of get a handle on the baby. So I think that lack of preparation, whether it be someone didn't take time off work, you know, someone didn't realize how much money they were going to have to spend, someone didn't realize how tired one parent might be, you know, and I think that takes a lot of planning and communication is difficult in sexual relationships. It's not always easy. And a lot of times I think people feel guilty when they're like, I don't want to have sex, rather than recognizing there's a biological component to this. And hope that helps.
No, it all helps. And I'm not even, this time we're not going to cover everything because she has, you guys, the perfect name for the podcast, Sex in South Beach. She has oils and all type of things that look in the description. I know majority of you are listeners, but look in the description. And for those with the increasing the YouTube numbers up and Facebook or wherever else this goes out, look in the description, go to her beautiful websites because she has many of them. But, you know, you really tackle this. But tell the people, you know, with the success that you've had and the best is yet to come, what is a community give back that you are doing or that you plan to do in the future?
Thank you. In September, which is National Yoga Month, we're going to have a lot of yoga for better sex classes. I know that a lot of your listeners are interested in business ideas and how people become their own entrepreneur, become their own boss. So I think it's important for people to recognize that when you have a specialty or an expertise like I do, to really see how you can leverage that as an entrepreneur. So I developed this Yoga for Better Sex class because I realized people needed an easy, fun way to play that could bring them together and also prepare their bodies and their minds and their whole chakra systems for better sexual experiences. And as you said, I have Sense Aromatherapy body oil, and we give that away at every Yoga for Better Sex class. All participants get a free roll-on of Sense Aromatherapy body oil. And I developed that actually when I was pregnant because I did not want to get bit by mosquitoes. And I realized that essential oils that I often prescribe to couples for sexual desire, they also functioned as insect repellent. So I put them together in a body oil here at the medical school to see if it would work. And it worked fantastically, not only to ignite desire, like you will start getting hugs from people who you don't know. A lot of the medical students come and they put it on right before happy hour because they need free drinks. But it also is very, very effective. And it's an organic way to repel mosquitoes. That is also available on Amazon or anywhere, Sense Aromatherapy body oil. And I think that if people can check out the podcast, which is Sex in South Beach, wherever you listen to podcasts, we talk about what we're offering. But this year is very exciting for us because in 2023, we're coming out with all of these sexual health offerings, free programs, and also paid but very accessible programs, nothing that people can't access from because they're not financially available to them. What we really want to get started with is a school, like a school to help people learn whatever they want to learn that might improve their sexual relationships or their ability to talk to their kids about sex or their ability to navigate menopause and the sexual changes that they'll experience, or erectile dysfunction, or diabetes, or all of the things that we all experience over the course of life. But in September, a concrete offering will be Yoga for Better Sex in person at the World Erotic Art Museum. So we're super excited about that, but stay in touch. We put everything on social media.
Awesome, you putting it out there, you guys, that oil is available on Amazon, so it might be able to get to you tomorrow. But, you know, after you hear this, who knows how many are left. So if you really need it, get it now. Don't even think about it. Give the folks any last words, because you really do this. You put a lot of time into it. So I try not to have, you know, repeat things. You've done so much press. I think somehow I found you through the Miami-Dade Chamber. Somehow I always thank them for everything, you know, as a member over there. Even though I'm in Palm Beach County, I feel like I'm in Miami every time I join a meeting. But give any last words and, you know, anything that maybe I haven't touched upon, the floor is yours.
Oh, thank you so much. I think the last words are, you know, let's play. Sex should be a playful, fun, and funny experience. And so many of us have shut down sexually because we don't know how to approach it. But it's, we can all recognize, most of us, I went to an all-girls Catholic school. Most of us were not raised in an environment where we were supposed to learn about sex. And I love talking to Black religious people because, look, if God wanted sex to feel, to not be pleasurable, one, he would have made it like, let's shake hands and then you get pregnant. And then, but two, we have to realize there is a purpose for the female orgasm, and it's not to procreate. A woman does not need to have an orgasm to procreate. And that means that the only purpose for a female orgasm is pleasure. That means God loves us. That means God wants us to have sex, and God wants women to feel pleasure when they're having sex. And approaching sex and sexual improvement, especially in relationships, can be, it can be like tricky. It can make you feel nervous. You can be like, I don't really know what to say. And for that, I say, turn on my podcast. It's a quick 15-minute lighthearted thing. And the point of that is it's going to ignite a conversation with you and your partner you've never had before. It does it all the time in my own life. We listen to a podcast that I did about a subject that has no impact on my personal life, but it then ignites a conversation with my partner that we've never had before. So I've done a lot of that work to help people not have those nerves or help them overcome that nerves when they think about, how do I improve my sex life? How do I tell my partner, you know, I actually haven't had an orgasm in 5 years. And so the way that you do it is you turn on the podcast, you listen to it in the car, and then it ignites a conversation that's pleasant and fun. And I think that's really important, bringing like the fun back to sex. A lot of my work at the university, almost all of it addresses sex problems, but my work outside of the university is about really honing sexual pleasure. And the reason why I do that, I try to make everybody remember, nobody loves you like you do. Nobody. So you've got one life to live. You better love yourself enough to make sure you're getting it all. So go ahead and go after that orgasm. Get it.
You guys have gotten the game from somebody who has the experience, the education, married, I'm going to say that again, and has a child. Well, you know, replay in case any of that, you know, I don't know if I should. You got the game. Now it's your job to like and share this game with somebody. It will change their life. Y'all be blessed.
Hi, everyone. Have you ever been curious about visiting Africa? Which African country were you interested in? Kenya, Nigeria, Uganda, South Africa, Ethiopia. Which country are you interested in? My good friend, Kellen Cash Coleman, came up with a course called My First Trip to Africa that I'll guide you through this process. It's only $20, and in this course you'll learn about passports, visas, vaccinations that you need before you go there, as well as a budget, how much the trip is going to cost. He also talks about what you should pack, what you should take with you, how you should travel on a budget. Did you know that $100 is worth 1,000 South African rand and over 10,000 Kenyan shillings? So imagine what you can do with $100 back home. I say back home because I'm from Sudan, I'm African, I already know how it's like. I know that, you know, when you convert Canadian and American money, it goes a long way when you're traveling across Africa. So if you're curious, if Africa is a place that you've always wanted to go, always wanted to move there, Kellen Cash is the person to ask. Check out the course, there's a little preview you can listen to before you actually purchase it. If you're interested in this course, visit www.diversifiedgame.com. Don't miss out.